Okay, good morning, good morning. Very, very brief piece today. I've tried to select out the psychological parts from the Kabbalistic parts. There's a lot of Kabbalah in this piece. And it's about the Agudas Ezov. Very at the center of the night of Pesach, L'kachtem Agudas Ezov, L'kvaltem Adam Asher Basav, and you put the blood on the mashko from the Shnei Mezuzos. Now, the reeds are always a sign of humility and lowliness, and this comes from a Gemara that speaks about the Mitzara. The Mitzara has to take the reeds with the Medrash, and the reeds bring them down a couple notches, reduce some of the ego. Presumably, the Mitzara is suffering tzaras based on Lashon Hara, based on arrogance, based on kind of condescension, judgmentalism. So taking a reed, it's much lowly and humble and bring things down a little bit, grounding him, grounding his ego. So presumably, the reeds in Mitzrayim played a similar role. Now, Chazal speak about the reeds as just reflective of the Jewish people being in a penurious state. They were impoverished, didn't have any. It doesn't reflect the humility, it just reflects the fact that they had sparse material available. They were slaves. And there's something homespun and pure about them taking reeds, because they're slaves and they take what they can. And Hashem shows it similar to the carbon of the Ani in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra. Hashem takes in solas, just like the behemoth. So Hashem realizes you don't have much, and I'll accept your reeds, and one day you'll have more. And Chazal trace, ulekachtem agudas ezov, tesvav nisan, to ulekachtem lechem priets hadar kapos, to maria manapet zavos, submit to Hashem one day, tesvav tishrei, later on in Parshas Emor. So that's the lowliness of the reeds. But in the pre-tzaddik's world, the reeds, and in Hasidus in general, the reeds are not just reflective of an impoverished state, they're reflective of an attempt to build humility at the core of Jewish identity, at the genesis of the Jewish peoplehood, and possibly, not so much in the pre-tzaddik, but in other svarim, as the Jews may let it get to their head, they're free, they're giddy, they're rich, Yechush Gadov, and Esau Yetzu B'Yad Ramah. So it's not just at the core, the seminal moment of Jewish identity, but also to correct or check against potential arrogance that could be spiral out of control once you get redeemed in the euphoria of redemption. Okay, that's all an introduction, what the reeds are meant to signify. How many reeds are there? No one really knows. Doesn't tell us how many. It does say Agudas Ezov. And we do know that the Gemara in Sukkah applies the word Aguda to the Lulav. Lulav Tzarech Eged. And the Lulav has three items in it. And the Gemara does say in Sukkah, En Aguda Pachusa Megimel. Two is a pair, and Aguda has to have at least three. So that means that in Mitzrayim, the base package, I'm sure people took more, but the base package was three reeds. Why did they take three reeds? Because there are three forms of humility that we're trying to be conveyed. So this is an attempt to try to break down humility. How do you achieve humility? What are the triggers of humility? But wait a second, there aren't just three forms of humility. There are three cardinal dangerous midos. What are the three most dangerous midos? Hakina, Behataiva, Behakavod, Motzinis Adam in Olam. Kina is jealousy, Taiva is sexual desire primarily, and Kavod is interest in fame, fortune, public adulation. So somehow the three core dangers are going to be offset by the three core forms of humility. Because humility is at the core, we talked about in this Shiur Midos, at the core of moral behaviors to be a humble person. So this is the setup. There are three reeds. Each reed is going to correspond to a different form of humility. And each form of humility will in turn offset one of the dangerous traits of Kina, Taiva, Vakava. So where does he get the three forms of humility from? So he gets it from the famous Gemara, Histakel b'shlosha devarim, ve'enata b'lidei avera. What should you look at to prevent avera? Dame ayin basa miti pasucha, ve'enata halech l'makam rima v'toleah. You come from a small little ounce of semen, of zera, of the bodily fluid. One day you'll be buried in the kever. One day you'll have to answer face the music in a grand orchestra in Shemayim. Hashem will there face the music. Cheshbon fech melech machayim lachim hakadosh baruch hu. So, tipa srucha is meant to offset kina. Kina means I'm jealous. I want what you have. I think I deserve more than you. I'm better than you. I've worked harder than you. I deserve. We all come from the same tipa srucha. We all come from the same. Humble beginnings is an overstatement. No beginnings. We have no beginnings to us. Say it more, in modern terms. We're all here because, thank God, we're fully equipped we have full faculties. There's so many complications that can take place during birth and during pregnancy and that whole period, from the tipa srucha to the leida, you have no control. Doctors barely have control. Parents certainly don't have control. And so many mutations and disabilities and neurological. So that's more of a scientific way to describe tipa srucha. So you should be happy for what you have. When you feel jealous about the next person, you say, thank God I can walk and I have my faculties and Baruch Hashem. So, okay, I don't have the money that I want, the achievements that I want. I should be happy with what I have, because the tipa srucha can help frame what I should be satisfied with. What about taiva? What about sexual desire? Well, that's the classic rimavataleya, right? When you see something that attracts your body, when you think about body and flesh, you say, wait a second, it's all transient. It all wrinkles and fades and crumbles and disintegrates. So that's the classic Musa, rimavataleya line. You see a attractive woman walking in the street, again, not in a way that's objectifying or dismissive of her. You know, you rimavataleya, just to yourself, you realize that I'm rimavataleya, my body feels a certain attraction, she's rimavataleya. So to get involved in the whole affairs of the body, it's very, very transitory. The final aspect of anava is the aspect of whatever kavod and honor and fame and ego, first of all, you'll be put in your place when you answer the Kaddish Baruch Hu, but also what's the point of kavod when Shemayim there's no kavod, and Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't care less, and it's about you and your own cheshbon ha-nefesh and your own performance, and Shemayim, you can't go into Shemayim and expect the Kaddish Baruch Hu to give you kavod. That'd be laughable. Expect Kaddish Baruch Hu to give you a pass. Oh, you have so much honor. You won so many awards down here, so it's all right. Every person is going to have to be disrobed or rendered transparent by Kaddish Baruch Hu. Whatever you've achieved in this world fades in terms of honor and public perception. Fades the moment you leave this world. You get nice espadim, but who cares? You never really feel speak nicely about you at your funeral. But Shemayim, they don't factor that in what people thought about you. They factor in really authentically who you are, what type of life you lead. So these are the three forms of humility that are meant to offset the three dangerous traits: kina, taiva, kavod. Damei basam itipa srucha, la'netaholech makom mimer v'saleya. Now the threes continue in Shemayim, three different parts of the Sphira, and the threes continue in the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the threes continue in the doorposts, two mezuzos and one mashkof. But those are very, very deeply, deeply Kabbalistic. I don't even understand most of it, so I'm not going to share it with you. The only other way that he dissects it is he talks about three different emotional moments. Before he talked about three different attitudes of it that can lead you to humility, lead you to reeds of humility. When he talks about three different emotions of humility, he talks about mitipa srucha means you feel fragile. I'm using my terms. You feel fragile, so fragility creates humility. I'm modernizing these terms. The next one is you feel brokenhearted. When you think about life and mortality, your heart breaks, you're sad. I would use the word sad, not fragile, but sad. Death causes sadness, limitations causes sadness. And the third thing is, when you think about a Kaddish Baruch, when I'm at the face of Avodah Shalom, I call trepidation and fear. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gemara in Shabbos, is shaking on his deathbed, and he's got two different paths. So he actually deconstructs humility to three different emotional platforms: fragility, sadness, shivron lev, and pachad, and fear. And I'm not sure those are equal or all three humility orienters, but it's interesting that he doesn't just try to create humility platforms based on where we're heading and where we're coming from, but how that affects our emotions. So it's a very holistic view. How can you create different forms of humility to offset the different toxic traits? Think about three different aspects: where we come from, where we're going, and then Shemayim. They each correspond to a different toxic trait, kinotype, and kavod. Then he tries to transform this or translate this into three different emotional cores of humility. One is fragility. One is brokenheartedness, sadness, melancholy, and the third is fear and trepidation. Okay? That's the non-Kabbalistic part of this piece. Okay.